and we're looking to do some sort of interesting analysis, all this kind of thing on the various plant ontologies and so on.
Cool. Oh, that's awesome. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. And Brennan, do you want to just introduce a little bit about what you guys have been working on that we're going to talk about today?
Absolutely. So today we'll be talking about terms to increase granularity under inflorescence, so different types of inflorescences throughout flowering plants. That's what's slated for today.
Yeah.
Before this, we worked on refining a few existing PO terms, defining, inventing some others, developing some rather, and increasing granularity in fruits.
Splendid, cool.
Yeah, so they've been doing quite a bit of work on the plant ontology, which is great. Well, I think we should go ahead and maybe get started. I don't know. Let me just run and take a quick look and see if we're just here.
All right.
Okay, well, so Brandon, do you want to share your screen or should I share mine?
Oh, it's fine with you sharing yours.
Okay, I'll share mine then. Okay, yeah. So we have a Google Doc. Oh, it looks like Pankaj is just logging in now, which is always interesting because I'm already logged in. okay.
Yeah, and I think we were at Racine last time.
Yeah, so maybe we should just, should we maybe just start at the beginning?
We could do that.
Yeah, hang on, I'll just, oh, I am sharing my screen. Okay, good.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can see your screen just fine.
Yeah, so, I mean, we don't, so the inflorescence was the parent term that we dealt with, but let's just start with the Racine again, and we'll kind of go through them, and then they're all together.
Okay. Sounds perfect. So, this is a Racine inflorescence. And it's an inflorescence with a monopodial growth habit, which at enthesis is composed of pedicellate flowers on an indeterminate first-order inflorescence axis. And that structure of that definition you'll see throughout all of the rest of the inflorescence types. And what we've done between the time where we last showed this to you and now is especially fleshed out examples for each of these.
Great, great.
So here we have Arabidopsis as an example, cherries, and then the pokeweeds example that was there before. Does that make sense? Anyone want me to explain?
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out if there's a sound. I think someone's trying to say something.
Okay.
I think it's Pankaj, it's the squirrel sound. I don't know if he's having problems or not. Pankaj, can you hear us?
Yeah, I think that it's just very...
There's something in the chat. Oh, he says it's in here.
Okay.
I don't think we can hear you. It's coming out as like... squeaky. No sounds. So maybe before we move on, you guys could, Brandon or Dario, you guys could explain the four, I think there were like four criteria for each of these classified them.
So I can highlight in the definition too, and it might be helpful. So each of these is an inflorescence, and each of these inflorescence types has different growth habits. So one of three types, either monopodial growth, which means that we have a central axis in the figure below with, let's quote, branches coming off of it, or sympodial growth, where there's only side branching and it's repeating subunits, or we have monopodial and sympodial growth. So that's the first part of our definition here. The next portion I'm highlighting is whether the flowers are pedicellate or sessile, so whether they're on stalks or appear to not be on stalks. And then we talk about if the first order inflorescence axis, which is here, the main axis, the central axis in this inflorescence, is indeterminate or determinate. And so right at the tip of that main axis, at the tops of the distal end, there is no flower there, that means this can continue to grow. It is indeterminate. If there's a flower there, it's going to be determinate. So those are the main terms we're going to use throughout these different definitions.
Great. And you got some nice examples there that people might be familiar with.
Yeah, so these little gray balls and all the examples are flowers.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. And let's see. I think that's about it to intro the structure of these.
Okay.
Does that sound good to everyone? Do you want to go into the next term?
Yeah, I think Punk is just having a little problem here.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, it's much better. Were you able to hear the explanation we just went through?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So that's a raceme. And again, think of Arabidopsis. And if we go to the next page, if we scroll down, we'll see a compound raceme inflorescence. So this is an inflorescence with a monopodial growth habit, just like I talked about in the last definition, which at enthesis is composed of an indeterminate first order inflorescence axis and pedicellate flowers on indeterminate higher order inflorescence axes. So you can think of this as a raceme of racemes. Okay? And so the diagram you saw above would be each of these second order inflorescences coming off of that main axis. So many species in Fabaceae have inflorescences of this type, and we have those in as examples, and quite a few synonyms.
I thought that Brassicaceae means a lot of Brassica things also are like that.
Yeah, there's a lot in Brassicaceae that are the racemes or compound racemes, yes. Yeah, so we put essentially one example or a few examples on each of these. We're working through the bioentities list right now. And unfortunately, a lot of taxonomic keys and papers really use this terminology inconsistently. And so we're kind of muddling our way through figuring out the good, correct types for each of the examples in the bioentities list. But you're right, Brassicaceae.
Yeah, it means what I'm worried is that if I read the comment, people should not think that, hey, Brassicaceae doesn't fall in this thing.
Okay. I'll take a note to make sure that we do not overlook it.
I would just say many species of Fabaceae, you can also say examples include. So then it doesn't exclude anything.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it, yeah.
Okay.
Because it's possible that, and let's say if you have a monopodial one that you showed before, right? And if there is a mutation in certain variety, it might start showing up as a compound raceme and has side shoots and fluorescent shoots. So it's possible that people may be able to use this one rather than that one.
Okay. And I do use, or I should say, we do use including below there. I make sure that the terminology is consistent through all the comments as well.
So I had one question.
Yeah.
How come this isn't a child of raceme inflorescence? Isn't this like a subtype of a raceme?
There are a couple different reasons. One, they don't necessarily, these different compound types don't necessarily develop directly in an evolutionary sense from one another. So it's not always the case that a raceme becomes a compound raceme.
No, I mean, I wasn't thinking of it that way so much, but it is a type of raceme inflorescence, but it's a compound one.
Yes, and the second reason is we found it incredibly difficult to write the definitions in that way. So if you typically, when botanists are writing about these things, they'll say a compound raceme is a compound raceme, but we couldn't find out in a genus differentia format, we couldn't figure out a nice way of saying that, essentially.
Well, I mean, that's kind of a technical issue, because if it should be a child, then we can figure out how to write the definition. But we shouldn't exclude it a child because the definition's hard to write.
So essentially, in just a raceme, the ultimate axis is a pedicel. It's not the same in a compound raceme. Your ultimate axis is still a pedicel, but it's on a higher order inflorescence axis. You don't have any higher order inflorescence axes in a simple raceme.
Simple raceme, yeah.
In some cases, to differentiate these different inflorescence types, we have to say it has an indeterminate whatever order axis. And then in a child, we'd have to say now it has a determinant first order inflorescence axis, or has other parts that would directly conflict with the parent.
I'm just reading the definition of raceme, and it says it's composed of pedicellate flowers. This one is composed of pedicellate flowers on an indeterminate first order inflorescence axis. And that's where the difference is that in the raceme, it's a first order, and here it's a higher order.
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be a second order indeterminate axis?
But it could, so it's just in this example that it's a second order. There are other examples where it can be third or higher.
Yeah, exactly.
You can have further branching.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't have that further branching in a raceme.
Right, yeah.
And double raceme is here used as a synonym because we think it denotes that, just like in the diagram here, it can only be, let's say, twice compound. And we use compound because we don't want to put a number on that ordering. It could be many different orders.
Okay, well, that makes sense. I'm just kind of playing the devil's advocate here.
Yeah, no, it's
for sure. The same thing comes up when we move on to spikes, which is next. We've got our spike, and then we have compound spike. And it's essentially the exact same as these two definitions. It's just the flowers aren't pedicellate. So it's a good question because it comes up over and over again.
And this should be singular. This is a minor point, but this is kind of, it's minor, but it's kind of important. It should be on an indeterminate higher order axis. Not sure. Does that make sense? I would just avoid.
Okay. There will always be more than one higher order in inflorescence axis. Does that matter?
Well, I wish Barry was here because I think Barry would be able to clarify this. I mean, it just seems to me like, I mean, what if there is only one?
Then it would be sympodial and it'd be a different type of inflorescence.
I mean, you could say, well, the way we've dealt with this before is saying on one or more indeterminate higher order. I guess you're still saying axes then, but yeah, I guess there are cases where you have to be plural, but.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but that's one of the things that we struggle with writing this, for sure.
Yeah, okay, well we can.
Yeah. It would look very, what you describe will look very similar to something once we reach the end of the document.
It would what?
It'll look very similar to one of the types much further on down the document. If you said there, what if there's just one higher order inflorescence axis, so. We'll get there.
So there can't be just one.
No, that would just be two flowers on the single stalk, sort of like an umbel with just two flowers.
Well,
or it could be something.
Inflorescence, the second order inflorescence axes here. What if it only had one?
Yeah, so that if it only had one of those, it would be sympodial, and it would look like a rapidium, which is down at the bottom of the sheet.
All right, well, let's just keep going. We can come back and tweak off to, yeah. Okay. Spike, that's an important one.
Yeah, spike. So an inflorescence with a monopodial growth habit, which at enthesis is composed of sessile flowers on an indeterminate first order inflorescence axis. In that comment, the most basal flowers of some spike inflorescences have short inflorescence flower pedicels, such as in some orchids, give an example here, and then an example of spikes in general, we put black pepper. So this is a first order indeterminate inflorescence axis with sessile flowers.
Great.
Okay. And very much like we just saw with raceme and compound raceme, what Darrow said, we have the same case here. So we have spike inflorescence, and then the next is a compound spike, where we have an inflorescence with a monopodial growth habit, and thesis is composed of indeterminate first order inflorescence axis and sessile flowers, but now those sessile flowers are on indeterminate higher order axes. And we have some amaranthus species here as example.
So do you think that wheat goes into the wheat and barley go into a compound spike?
Yeah, so a lot of, I actually think those are panicles.
Ooh.
I think that all the axes are determinate. And so instead of an indeterminate first order inflorescence axis like in a raceme, in a panicle, all of the axes would be determinate. There'd be a spikelet or a floret on the first order inflorescence axis at the distal end, I think. I think I have those as examples on panicle too, but you know, we don't work with grasses. Feel free to.
I mean, these don't look like spikelets really on the. Well, let's continue and then we can.
Oh, on the illustration of the compound spike, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are not spikelets.
No.
Yeah.
So.
But I see what you mean, because basically it looks like a spike of spikelets. So, and then if we go next, we have catkin. So an inflorescence with a monopodial growth habit, which at enthesis is composed of indeterminate first order inflorescence axes, sessile unisexual flowers that are each subtended by conspicuous inflorescence bracts. And those are the green structures. I don't know why I'm pointing with my mouse. Those are the green structures around each of those flowers, the little hats, if you will.
If you're on the Google Doc, you can click there if you want to
highlight something. No, but I guess it'll just select the picture. But so poplars and birches were two examples that I thought would be really common for people to think about. People be familiar with those. And in the comment, I say that catkin inflorescences are often pendulate.
So like in poplar, are both the staminate and pistillate flowers in catkins?
I believe so.
Yeah, so their defining characteristic is that they're unisexual.
Right, right. But I was wondering, are both sexes in catkins? Like there's a male catkin and a female catkin?
Exactly. You'd have two separate catkins, each with one sex only, unisexual flowers.
Yeah, so the entire inflorescence is solely male or female.
Okay. Birches and poplars. And is that a pedo term, pendulate?
You know, honestly,
I don't know.
I failed to look that up in pedo.
I'll just stick a comment on there, check.
Could be.
Okay, and I see you brought in one of the synonyms that was in the previous.
Yes, so we have been doing that with the synonyms from inflorescence.
Yeah.
Already in the PO, are already in the PO.
Okay, great, let's move on.
So the next is spadix, and I'm interested to see what you guys have to say about something in the comment here. So first I'll read the definition. So an inflorescence, monopodial growth habit, which at enthesis is composed of sessile flowers on a radially enlarged indeterminate first order inflorescence axis in a basal enveloping inflorescence bract. And so for the examples, we have aroids and palms. And then I put this corn business in here at the end. So pistillate inflorescence of corn. I was thinking about what exactly this would fit into and whether or not we like it as an example of a spadix. I think it fits into this definition here. I was wondering what people thought about that.
I don't think
consider it
as spadix.
Yeah, so that was my first, you know, when I was trying to place it somewhere, I thought, well, where does this fit? And I thought, well, either we might have to rework the definition here of what a spadix is, or, I mean, it is indeterminate in the first order axis. It's monopodial. It depends how we want to treat what I presume, the large bracts that are enveloping the
outer. Actually, it is, this way it is true, but each row consider it as a branch. It's a fused branch.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, so you're saying where the florets are actually like on the cob for the...
Yeah, so the gene, if you look at the teosinte looked more like what you have is a tassel.
Yeah.
It's yeah. Basically an inside out, and it was there. Yes.
I didn't know you were looking at the pictures. Which one?
Keep going down. One few more, few more, few more. You see that?
Oh, I see it there. Yes. Uh-huh.
So it had hard shells outside. Triosinte. Mm-hmm. One mutation put the hard shell inside, and the seed came inside out. Okay, yes. So inside part is actually equivalent to whatever you have, the glumes, hard glumes.
Okay,
it's not an inflorescence axis; it's a glume that went in.
So. You're talking about like the enlargement that I'm referring to of that, what I'm calling a first order inflorescence axis?
Yeah.
It's actually hardened glumes?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Well, that's the little clear thing on the base of the kernel, right? It was in teosinte, it's like this cupule.
Yeah, but what is the actual like central part of the
hardened glume?
That's all hardened glumes, huh? That's wow. Okay.
Well, it still would have an axis, though.
Yeah, axis is still there.
An axis for something that we mm-hmm. can go off of. Mm-hmm. It was a better diagram here. They've got lots of pictures of the tassels.
What is this teosinte and maize? What is this? What are they saying?
Yeah. Well, this is showing how these cupules, you know, what the RA means.
Yeah, so I guess I'm interested in that RA portion.
Is it the page? This is Dobley's lab. They have some nice diagrams.
What is RA?
Okay, I'm just getting it up here.
Rachis internode, it says.
Invaginated rachis internode.
And outer gloom. So, yeah.
Wow.
But there's still an axis in the center here.
Right.
But it's
the center is Rach's axis, and then outer gloom went inside at the base of the kernel.
So but it doesn't go all the way. So the black here is the gloom that you're talking about, right? And then mm-hmm. the RA, so it is an enlarged axis, but that gloom does come quite a...
Yeah.
Comes, okay. Yeah, I see the compressed branches now. So, I mean, what do you want to do with that then?
Would you still consider it as spadix? I doubt it.
I mean, I would, because RA is enlarged in maize relative. I mean, I know it developed from teosinte, which does not look like a spadix here, but on the right, figure 3 looks to me like an enlarged first order inflorescence axis with spikelet. The compressed internode branches coming off of the side.
So yeah, and each of these things surrounded by OG is a spikelet.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the difference.
Which is your, for example, your first order inflorescence branches.
Would be the second order inflorescences, right?
Yeah, second order.
Let me scroll up here a little bit.
Yeah, so I mean that's the bit that it's confusing to me because, you know, this compound in that case. And
no, that's what RA seed, that's the same thing that RA seed would be like.
But those would be single flowers, though.
Yeah, but on a compressed second order axis.
Which is a pedicel, though.
Mm-hmm.
But in your RA seed, it would be...
The spikelets are different in that they have a different bract. I mean, because you have the glumes and paleo and lemna and that being a separate... Okay. I mean, Yeah, I mean, it's a little hard to figure out with grasses what the second order should be called in a lot of these cases, because you have these second order inflorescences that have a specialized term, right? We all say spikelets, but then they are found in many different types of inflorescences. And I think that's another complication on top of these just basic botanical terms.
Yeah, so the very first thing you need to identify is you mentioned corn, mm-hmm. But corn has two different kinds. One is tassel, yes. And one is ear. So you got to be very specific about which one are you talking about.
Right. Oh, I'm talking about here, just the pistillate case. Yeah. For right now, we have this the stamina inflorescence, I believe. Well, under.
Here's a nice diagram. Excuse the heading, but. So here's the ear, and it shows the way the spikelets are arranged on it. And I think the fact that it has these spikelets makes it not a spadix.
Okay.
And that the basal enveloping inflorescence bract, is that the husks?
Well, that's what I was thinking, basically. I mean, this is kind of a thought experiment to think of how grasses fit into this whole scheme too for me, because, well, here we have enveloping bracts, and then at the terminal end, so the distal portion of this, in that figure you're looking at, where we don't have fully developed spikelets. And in aroids, think of the very large aroids, like the Titan arum or something, you have flowers at one portion, tip that's not, we have these enveloping bracts and things, and it just sort of, I thought, well, to me it kind of fits in this definition, so maybe we should revise this definition or fit the pistillate inflorescence of corn into something else that we haven't yet named.
Yeah. I would hesitate to call this corn a spadix.
Yeah, and I do too, frankly. So I thought I would just put it here so that we could discuss it. And
yeah, no, it's good to look at it and discuss it.
And the best person to talk to would be, if you really want to get it done and get a backing, is asking Toby Kellogg.
Oh, okay. We know. We can talk to Toby Kellogg. Yeah. For sure. I will put a comment there.
Okay. Is there something you put in the chat here? You wanted me to open Pungish?
Yeah, I was just showing the same thing.
Oh, it's the same.
That's what you guys were looking at. This is the
Piusante. Too much detail, really. I don't think they're usually just running.
No, I think it was the same figure if you look at the side, the third one. One more to your right, yeah.
Yeah, this one here, yeah. Because they are little spikelets.
Yep.
Yeah, so the glooms are, that's really cool. Always something new to learn about corn.
Yeah, the glooms are outside of the spikelet pair. So, okay.
And so the glooms are always the first bract on a spikelet, right? So these are just like really hard and really very much a press to the first order inflorescence axis. Yeah,
right.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
So we'll have to think about corn a little bit more.
Okay, we'll play with that issue. And like I said, maybe spadix, because even in palms, people talk about inflorescences being spadices or not. I mean, they have a single enveloping bract that's very woody, and some of these are pretty compound. So we've played with the idea of spadix and compound spadix, and I think this is a portion that will be helpful to even ask for other people's input to.
Yeah, and spadix, I thought that there is also a distinction between bottom ones are female and the top male or something like that.
That's certainly the case in a lot of spadix inflorescences, but I haven't come across a term that delineates or discriminates between the two. At least I don't know one off the top of my head, but I could see that being.
I don't think that's the case in Ariaceae, like in palms, Ariaceae. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is the case in Ariaceae, yeah, but not in Ericaceae.
Okay.
I really don't like the family names AirAC, EricAC, mm-hmm. and then EricAC for blueberries. They're so similar, it's hard for me to say them in a row.
Really enunciate them, don't
exactly.
you?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would say male and female, I would just say staminate and pistillate.
Okay. Okay. Do you want to go on to capitulum?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so a capitulum of inflorescence, an inflorescence with a monopodial growth habit, which at anthesis is composed of sessile flowers on a radially enlarged determinate first order inflorescence axis. So many capitula inflorescences or capitulum inflorescences have basal involucre bracts, which you can see here in the drawings, or I should say the illustrations, examples being sunflowers, and asterisks and teasels. So here we could, I could use including again, like you were saying earlier, so I don't sound exclusionary.
Okay.
And we've brought in some synonyms from the older synonyms list as well.
Okay, good.
And so the picture on the right sort of looks spadixy, but again, it's determinate. And we have many bracts at the bottom usually.
That's good. And,
yeah, it's capitulum.
Capitulum. So that's like a sunflower, or what's the other example?
It's mainly asteraceae, right?
Yeah, asteraceae.
Yeah, I think that dipsacaceae or teasels are a really good example.
Yeah, this is teasels.
Yeah, so that's kind of what the one on the right is modeled like. So left asteraceae, the right one teasels.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then we have a compound version of that, where we have an inflorescence with a monopodial growth habit, which at anthesis is composed of a radially enlarged inflorescence axis and sessile flowers on determinate higher order inflorescence axes with basal and blue bracts. So basically, this is what we just saw, but we have many of them on one enlarged first order axis. Examples of these, some things, again, in the Asteraceae have these compound capitula. And I just put a note here in case anyone is using a key and comes across the word glomerules. So second order inflorescences of compound capitula are oftentimes called glomerules. And those are the small individual heads here.
Uh-huh.
Lots of synonyms. You'll see that as we go further down the list, it's almost like the synonyms increase. But many of these differences are between different types of compound, capitula, and everything else will meet very slight differences between them and inconsistently used. And or they're words like double. And where, again, we think that sounds like a loaded term where you'd only ever have, you know, two orders of inflorescence axes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool. So those should maybe be narrow then.
Yeah, the scope of the synonyms are something that we wanted to discuss, you know, with you or everyone.
Yeah.
Because we don't feel like, you know, we're experts in every case where we designate a scope of a synonym. At least I don't. And so we should, yeah, talk about
that. So the heterothetic compound capitulum, again, what's the relation? It's these.
So the homothetic and heterothetic terms you'll see in a lot of the synonyms list, and that's really about the nature of the determinacy of the first order inflorescence axis. So in some texts, people will talk about a first order inflorescence axis being determinate when it ends in, when it, quote, terminates in a repeating unit that is usually a second order inflorescence axis. So here we have a determinate axis that terminates in one of these heads, these glomerules, right? Like exactly where your cursor is.
Yeah.
So imagine if you had a single floret there, it could be determinate, but it would just be a single flower. Or you have this glomerule there where it's determinate in the same way, it just happens to be one of these repeating units. And that's what homothetic and heterothetic refer to in each of these types.
Right, so they're more specific form.
So exactly, and in some cases, that subunit itself can be indeterminate, which is very confusing. So there isn't necessarily a fluorid at the tip of that second order inflorescence axis, but the inflorescence itself terminates in that subunit, if that makes sense, that periclade.
Yeah.
And so it was a term that we just ended up synonymizing throughout these. I mean, in the future, those could be fleshed out, but.
Yeah, but my thought was that I just think they should be narrow rather than related.
That makes sense.
That does.
They're like more specific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's good otherwise, though.
I think these are all interesting facts of biology, and now I can see the comparison between umbil and compound umbil versus
yeah.
this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, good. It's nice to hear that as we go through this.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like if I'm looking at it, it's just the mutations where your first and second order branches are fused.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a lot of these, and when you look through a lot of texts about inflorescences, the literature is so deep. There is so many slight differences that I could imagine being controlled by slight variations.
And sometimes they name differences in like branch organizations that they don't have examples of in real life. It's something that's similar to a panicle that could exist, but doesn't necessarily exist. And then they'll name that and describe that.
No. So
that like sifting through and trying to find things that actually do exist.
Yeah, they just sort of enunciated possibilities. And then on the flip side of that, in panicle inflorescence, when we go to the next page, there are, especially with panicles, versions that have just two florets sort of paired on what you could call a cinquecode order inflorescence axis. Everything else would just be single florets, and they might give that a name of an impoverished something else or a type of inflorescence that has even more florets. Mm-hmm. And that might vary by individual inflorescences on an individual plant. So there are things that aren't even fixed in species or individuals even, and they can name those. And we synonymize a lot of those here.
So are any of the raspberries and blackberries are also are examples of these things?
Capitulum. I think it's like a blackberry or a mulberry. Mulberry is catkin, and raspberry is capitulum.
Maybe a panicle, I believe. And like each of these would be.
We should make sure because raspberry, blackberry, and raspberry genomes are getting sequenced. So we should make sure that those are referenced there.
Okay.
Yeah. Examples.
Okay. Will do. I think panicle is next.
Okay. Scroll down. Panicle.
Yeah, so this is where we see a lot of our grass examples. So an inflorescence with a monopodial growth habit, which at enthesis is composed of pedicellate flowers on determinate inflorescence axes. So all of the axes terminate here in a flower or a spikelet. Here in the comment, panicle inflorescences are most often conical in shape. Examples being, and then I enumerate from the bioentities list, quite a few grasses, grapes, and then a polymonium example that's used in a lot of texts. And then we have two different, Dario has nicely provided two illustrations of different panicles.
So do we have a term for floret?
Well, we have the term floret, yes.
I would say pedicellate flowers or floret.
Well, yeah, floret is a child of flower.
Okay.
We could say or spikelets too.
Right, because or this spikelets. Thing is spikelets.
And we could provide an example with spikelets.
But then spikelet would not be pedicellate.
Yeah, well, yeah, this comes back to the spikelet pedicel term. So, yeah, I'll think about that. I can write something up to propose what we could do with, so that we could actually have the word spikelet here somewhere too to help guide people.
I'll put a note on here.
Can we just say pedicellate flowers or spikelets?
Okay, and you mentioned that which at enthesis, so there is a PO developmental stage ID. You should be able to use that for enthesis.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that for all of these.
Thanks, Pankaj. That's a good point.
Now, we thought that using adenthesis here would help us with the infructescence terms in the future.
Excuse me. So you include the staminate, you know, the tassel inflorescence of ZMAs.
Yeah, and this is when I was putting in examples, I thought, oh, corn goes here, and then I thought, no, it's just the staminate inflorescence. So what's the pistillate? And that was the moment I was thinking about the scope of our definitions and where it would fit.
I mean, I think the ear fits in here too, based on that diagram you're looking at.
You mentioned triticum astivum. We should mention that wheat spike, because people call that a spike.
Yeah, there are lots of maybe what. So a lot of the things that are spikes that have spikelets, you know, coming from the side branches with multiple florets per spikelet, would fall under what we think of as compound inflorescences. And the issue there is if the first order inflorescence axis is determinate, it would be a panicle. But if it would be indeterminate, it would be like a compound spike of spikelets or a compound raceme.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, not a compound raceme because the first order is not determinant. So
wheat in general is spike of spike.
So we should think it's not a spike because it's compound.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, I think there are multiple florets aborted or not per spikelet, right? I'm not a grass expert. I'm thinking aloud, I guess. So it's not good question. You know, Dario? No.
I don't.
Yeah.
We need to maybe look into that a little bit more and make sure that this is in the right place.
Yeah, our grass examples.
Is this example supposed to be Avena, not Advena?
What's that?
Is that supposed to be Avena?
Oh, yes. That's
not that Advena.
Auto correction.
Oats.
Yeah. Sorry, it's not a water lily. Let me take away that.
This is about oats.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would include, in addition to your Latin name, you should also use the common name.
Okay.
Including oat, barley.
Okay. I'll make a comment.
So, yeah, we want to capture the instincts from regular layperson, or they don't know the binomials all the time.
Okay. Will do.
The key here is that these are determinant axes.
Yeah.
And a monopodial growth.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think most of the grasses are in here.
I'm looking at what you guys mentioned. A raspberry could be a capitulum kind of things. They're not expecting that because the swollen part is the receptacle. It's not the first order inflorescence axis.
Yeah, we were just thinking of Moraceae.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are, I think, arranged in, I'm going to guess they're panicles or racemes off the top of my head. I don't know about the determinacy of the first
order. I think you might have to do exactly the same as you have it for strawberry or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a compound fruit, right? On a receptacle.
Yeah, but you mean in regard to?
I was thinking about raspberries.
Oh, raspberries. Yeah, it is a compound fruit, but it's they're individual flowers in an inflorescence. They just look like fruitlets there because of the apocarpus.
I think I got confused. What we are discussing is at the inflorescence stage, not at the fruit stage.
Right.
That's fine.
Yeah.
So you said, Pankaj, that they're just sequencing it?
What?
Raspberry.
Red. I think black raspberry is already published.
Yeah. So this, the flower.
Yeah, so if we look at one of the inflorescences here, sort of by the, down to the right, below the pink ones, one down, you can see the inflorescence. It looks determinate. One to the left of that, where your cursor is.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
This one?
Yeah. It looks determinate. That looks like a panicle to me. So that looks like the terminate terminal flower here, and then we have pedicellate flowers coming out.
And each flower forms this compound fruit.
Yeah, so those are individual carpels. This goes back to the bit we were talking about using gynecium in the PO and then carpel, basically. So here, each of those is one flower. Each of those is an inflorescence, like in a capitulum. And those are individual ovaries, basically, on one receptacle. So multiple unfused ovaries on a single receptacle. Mm-hmm. So at the top where you see the white petals, those are five petals on one flower. And then all of the little small hook-like things are the styles of individual ovaries. Yeah. So yeah, on a capitulum, the swollen thing would not be the receptacle, it would be the first order inflorescence axis. And then each of the individual ovaries here would be analogous to the single flowers on a capitulum.
This is a weird picture because the sepals are inside the petals on this.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that when I was looking at it. It looks strange, right?
It's very strange. I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's a mutant. I don't know.
One to the right looks that way as well.
This one? Oh, yeah. Maybe it's just the way they're arranged, like they're you know, alternating.
It could be because the one below it has almost aborted petals and it just looks like the
sepals. Now you can see that the sepals are actually behind the, in the next whorl. Okay, well, we should continue here. So we've got some good discussion. Panicle, are we ready to go on the quorum?
Yeah, we can go on the quorum.
Go ahead.
All right, so this is an inflorescence. And this is our first with both monopodial and sympodial growth portions. So an inflorescence with monopodial and sympodial growth habits, which at anthesis is composed of a determinate first order inflorescence axis, determinate higher order inflorescence axes with pedicellate flowers that collectively form a convex plane of flowers. Comment, the inflorescence axes and inflorescence flower pedicels of a corymb inflorescence vary in length, resulting in a single convex plane of flowers. In the example, high bush cranberry, Eric Casey. So again, we can change all these to say including certain species, so it doesn't sound like it's just that species.
I think it should say including.
Okay.
That looks fine. Once again, for antheses at the PO stage.
You can go through and do that on all of them. I don't think you need to repeat this, the convex plane of flowers, because you've got that in your definition.
Yeah, I was looking at that and I thought the only reason we kept it because we thought it might be guiding in explaining how that plane comes about just out of interest, but it doesn't add anything new. You're right.
I mean, I would have it, I would put it either in the definition or in the comment. I don't think you need it in both.
Okay. Well, we can remove it here.
Or you could reword it somehow.
Okay.
You know, if you feel like you need to give a little bit more explanation, it's just that it's almost exactly the same.
Yeah, no, it was just for fun. I don't think it's necessary. We can delete that. I can make it go away now. The magic of working online.
The magic of Google Docs, yeah. I'm going to have to look at my blueberry bushes because I didn't realize the flowers were like that.
Yeah, in blueberries and tomatoes and some other common things, it's amazing how affected the inflorescences can be with breeding. And not all are corymbs like this in blueberries.
You say there's tomatoes as well, though?
They're in a different inflorescence type. I just mean when you're thinking of common things in the garden as fun examples, within a genus even, different species could have types that fall into different of these categories just because of breeding and us affecting them. So,
right, especially
in general, don't all have this, but I thought that this species, because it was named for its inflorescence type, was a good example. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's nice how they all form the nice plane.
Yeah.
It wouldn't hurt maybe to put in a couple more examples, I think.
Sure.
Okay. Images we have of it.
Yeah, any examples people want included, we are more than happy to do that. So we just wanted to have at least one for each.
Yeah, definitely.
And speaking of that shape, the next couple terms or the next term, I should say, also revolves around shape due to differential extension of either pedicels or the higher order inflorescence branches. And so this one is called anthella, so an anthella inflorescence. It's an inflorescence with a monopodial growth habit, which at enthesis is composed of a determinate first order inflorescence axis, determinate higher order inflorescence axes, with pedicellate flowers that collectively form a concave plane of flowers. Now, in contrast to the convex ones. Again, I'll get rid of that, get rid of the beginning of the comment. And then we have an example species that's being used in the lab here for fruit development, actually. So I thought it would be a good example. And then two synonyms.
And what does the dichasium mean?
Dichasium refers to cymose structures that we'll talk about in, I think the next definition, where the next inflorescence type, I should say, where you have basically a central axis, so a monopodial ground plan, and then second order inflorescence axes coming from either side. So like two branches, basically. So there are dichasium, polychasia, pleochasia, differing numbers. Monochasia happen in sympodial systems that we'll get to further in the list.
That makes sense.
And it fits a lot of these. So it's a broad in scope, and so you'll start seeing that a lot.
And so you're putting the name anthella in as a, without inflorescence as a synonym on all these.
What's that?
Oh, I was just noticing you were including this as a synonym without the inflorescence term.
Yes. So we've done that for all of them. We followed what we did with fruit, so that if you just used anthella or spadix or spike or panicle or whatever, without inflorescence, you would still find the proper term.
Yeah. And Brandon, in the original synonym list on inflorescence, we had anthellae.
Okay. Oh, the plural forms.
Yeah. So
do you need to include plural forms?
Yeah. You probably want to bring those down from the main. It was anthellae.
Okay. Yeah. We didn't include those. So we can go back and do that.
Yeah. Because we don't want to leave those behind, because that's basically refers to this kind of inflorescence, but the plural form.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll just highlight this here. Oops, I don't want to put it in. There we go. Okay, so cyme.
So cyme is a sort of complex one. So cyme is a very general sounding inflorescence in a lot of textbooks and is used in many different cases. We treat it explicitly here and have a pretty long comment to say why that is. So I'll start with the definition. It's an inflorescence with a monopodial growth habit, which at enthesis is composed of a determinate first order inflorescence axis, pedicellate flowers on paired determinate higher order inflorescence axis. And as a comment, we have a cyme inflorescence is used here to treat inflorescences that are commonly referred to as dichasial, pleochasial, or polychasial cymes, each of which are named according to the number of higher order inflorescence axes at a single axis. Cyme is not used here to treat monochasial cymose inflorescences, which contain at least one repeating subunit. So the issue is, and then all these examples. So the issue is when we were talking about sympodial and monopodial growth habits in the beginning of this, cyme is often used in textbooks when they're talking about either of those types. So whether something is monopodial or even if it's sympodial, it's very, very confusingly used. So here we define exactly what we're calling a cyme. And the inflorescence types that will come after this are often referred to as cymoid. And we just didn't do that at all. So we had cyme and then specific names for those and then enumerate them in this comment. Many species of the figwort family, so Scrophulariaceae and Verbena family, Verbenaceae, are good examples. And so these illustrations, the one on the left is an example of a dichasium, the word you asked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And the one on the right is a polychasium. So we have from the single internode, multiple subunits coming out.
This is the di and that's the poly.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's all about these repeating subunits, which again is really the mark between synpodial and monopodial. And so we took all the ones that are monopodial, put them inside, and then enumerated specific types as we move further down the document.
Yeah, and again, I think there's a couple synonyms that, like the simule.
Yeah.
That maybe could be put on here. So you can go back and check the synonyms.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
We'll go through that whole synonym.
Is everybody able to stay for a little bit longer so we can finish this?
Yep.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. So what we just saw with cyme, now we're going to see basically compound cymes, two different types. So the first is indeterminate thyrse inflorescence. So a thyrse is basically a raceme of cymes. An inflorescence with monopodial and or sympodial growth habits, which at enthesis is composed of an indeterminate first order inflorescence axis and bilaterally symmetrical second order inflorescence axes with pedicellate flowers and determinate higher order inflorescence axes.
So this
it's a long definition.
This should be axes here. You read it differently though, the way it's spelled.
Oh no, actually second order inflorescence is a term.
So you said axis though when you read it.
Oh, sorry.
So it's a bilaterally symmetrical second order
inflorescences.
So maybe we should put the POID there.
Yeah.
With the pedicellate flowers and the determinate order inflorescence. Okay. Yeah. See, since you explained the monopodial and sympodial habit here, I don't know if you want to, because it's kind of confusing to have it in the definition and say it could be either. I don't know. What would Barry would say about this?
Saying it could be either things?
Yeah. So that's just highlight.
It's possible to just remove that clause from the definition because it is addressed in the comment.
I'm not sure who's typing. I thought maybe you guys were typing something in there.
No, I'm not typing.
Okay. So let's just think about that. We can run it by.
Yeah, there are a couple like that where we could probably differentiate the types.
Right. And, yeah. Okay. So do we have an example of one that's sympodial here and one that's monopodial?
So the one on the left, the basis, so the first order inflorescence axis and whatever we can decide is monopodial. And then the higher order, so when you go into each second order inflorescence axis, that's sympodial.
Nice.
Where your cursor is.
It's like a combination, yeah.
Exactly. So it's a combination and then each subunit is a combination. Yeah. Yeah. So if in each of the bilaterally symmetrical ones, if you draw a line down the center, basically the left and right are sympodial and the whole thing taken together is monopodial. Very cool patterns, but not easy to define.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then
the one on the right is just monopodial.
Yeah, and like Dario said, I don't know if you could hear him, the one on the right is solely monopodial. So almost like small umbels popping off of the sides of each of the second order inflorescence axes.
And what, do we have examples for this one?
There is not an example on this one.
We don't have an example?
not on indeterminate thirst. So it's an oversight.
It's just a hypothetical.
No, it does exist. I just did not put an example on this one accident, I guess, or it was erased during a revision that I made or something.
Okay, but so we have examples.
Yeah, I think it was just an accident.
Yeah. Off the top of my head, I can say that lilacs are either indeterminate or determinate thyrses, the next one on the list. But I'd have to look at the nature of the first order inflorescence axis. So lilac will go on one of these, if that sounds good to you guys.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. And you might separate your examples into the different kinds, maybe, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
And they're very complicated synonyms, holy cow.
Yeah, they're because they're all of these little subunits that can be arranged in different ways. They've received many names.
Okay, good. Did you guys draw these diagrams or did you get them from somewhere?
They're taken from Wikimedia Commons and then adjusted with Illustrator.
Yeah, and corrected in some cases.
Corrected and manipulated in some way.
Okay.
So just add it to the full disclosure on any document that you make it open.
Okay, of course. And the next term we see here is exactly what I described above, but the first order inflorescence axis is determinant.
Determinant, yeah.
Yeah. And so you see that floret in the top of the axis. So an inflorescence with a monopodial, actually I should say monopodial or sympodial growth habits, if we decide to keep that clause for these, which at enthesis is composed of a determinant first order inflorescence axis and bilaterally symmetrical second order inflorescences with pedicellate flowers and determinant higher order inflorescence axes.
You know what might actually help with this is if you specify which axis you're talking about.
Okay, saying that the first
one that you said the main axis has monopodial growth.
Yes. Yeah, so the first one always would be monopodial.
Well, that might be a way to deal with it.
Yeah, that could be splitting out because the sympodial growth would only happen in the second order inflorescences.
Yeah, in the higher order.
Compartmentalizing that will help.
Yeah, that might be a way to deal with it because it's good to keep that in there if it's a determining feature.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you might just want to specify which axes you're talking about.
Okay.
All
right.
And then we need synonyms on this one too.
Yeah, examples for this one. Yeah, so I'll check into the lilac business because again, it might go here depending on that the determinacy of that first order inflorescence axis.
Why my cursors?
Dennis is really good to ask for examples of things, so I'll ask him for help with these ones.
Okay.
I'm sure if he were here, he'd be spouting off examples.
It would be like obscure things that no one's ever heard of.
Possibly, yeah. Or even fossils.
Yeah,
so,
maybe fossils, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we're into umbels. Yeah, so an inflorescence with a monopodial growth habit, which at enthesis is composed of pedicellate flowers on a first order inflorescence axis with compressed inflorescence axis internodes. So the flowers in an umbel appear as clusters originating from a single point due to compression of the inflorescence axis internodes of the first order inflorescence axis. And this is another thing I just put in for information's sake, but if it sounds repetitive, we can delete.
I think example, it's helpful actually here. Yeah.
Characteristic of the ivy family, including English ivy and ginseng.
What about dill? That's the one I always think of.
Oh, dill is a compound.
Dill, carrots.
Compound umbel.
Oh, actually, yeah. So dill is a compound, which comes next.
Oh, okay.
Dill, fennel, all sorts of things.
That whole umbellifery family.
Yeah, umbellifery. Yeah. So Apiaceae here. Yeah. Yeah. Or APACA, depending on how you want to say it. So that's that one. And the next is the compound umbel. We have two examples of that. So an inflorescence with a monopodial growth habit, which at enthesis is composed of a first order inflorescence axis with compressed inflorescence axis internodes and pedicellate flowers on higher order inflorescence axes with compressed inflorescence axis internodes. And examples, fennel, poison hemlock are two that I thought of here also in that family at the AC. And
we can add dill.
We can add dill.
So it's not called umbellifery anymore?
No.
Oh.
Well, all of those, so the names I think in the late 80s, the family names were standardized to the AC ending. And you had to pick a genus in that family. So.
But if people still recognize as Lawless doing it, so I was, if APAC, the umbilifery is a synonym just added there.
Okay, it is technically a synonym, so we
can. Yeah, APAC or umbilifery.
Okay.
This is looking good.
And then you have question marks on the scopes of these guys.
Yeah, and
back to the same.
Some of these will be narrow, like the homothetic, heterothetic will be narrows. I think those will all be narrows, actually, based on what you said.
I would think so, yeah. That looks like it should be.
I'll change one to narrow so that I remember to do that, and I'll highlight it.
So one question that I'm just recognizing is that you have a leaf-like structure at the base of the inflorescence.
Uh-huh.
Right, and then you have a similar structure at the base of the first order branch.
Yeah.
Are they the same considered as leaf or they're different?
Are those profiles?
Bracteoles, right?
Okay.
This one.
I think they're bracteoles.
That would be bracteole, right?
Those are bracteoles and the other ones are leaves.
Well, this might be a bracteole too, because this is a compound inflorescence, so it's a repeating unit. Here's one.
Yeah, I think they're both bracteoles.
Yeah, I think the caulin leaf would be out of the shot there, so to speak.
Mm. Right.
Further down.
Yeah. The previous in the node.
Yeah, so I think the region below, at the far bottom of those, would be the peduncle.
This down here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now we get into the monocasia. So these are the, if remember when you said, what if you just have one branch coming off of the side of something? And I said, well, that would be sympodial. That would just be like having the first and second order of one of these guys. And we have the orders numbered on these. So this is the raphidium. It's an inflorescence with a sympodial growth habit, which in anthesis is composed of determinate inflorescence axes with pedicellate flowers that form a single plane with the latest developing flowers on the highest order inflorescence axis, which is found at the center of the inflorescence. Mm-hmm. And so that would be 7 in this picture. Mm-hmm. Dario has also included top-down views. That's what's on the left-hand side there. So you can see a bract and a flower and be able to trace the orders quite well and see that it develops from the outside in, basically. And these are characteristic of Iridaceae.
Really?
Yeah, so they do a very cool zigzaggy sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But in an iris, they're not all at the same plane.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think it's about the axes being at the same plane and not necessarily the flowers. Because in an iris, the flowers fall into different planes, but the axes are all in one plane.
Right, but so the definition says flowers that form a single plane. So I don't think that fits.
Yeah, we'll tweak that because as we go, I think Darrow's exactly right in that the diagram on the left is totally straight, and you'll see that some of them branch at angles, essentially. So basically, it's like dorso-ventrally compressed here.
Right, and so my argument was if we're using iris as an example, I think that's going to be kind of confusing for folks.
Yeah, I'll rework that. I'll put a comment on it. Because you're right, it sounds like we're modifying flowers when we say single plane there. So.
Right.
One thing I'm realizing it over here is that all the things that we are looking at are just the phenotypes of inflorescence. So I'm still worried a little bit that we are adding a lot of phenotype aspects in our PO.
I'm not sure I follow.
If it's an inflorescence, but inflorescence with sympodial growth habit and the alternate branching patterns, like what you're seeing here, is a phenotype of an inflorescence. It's a characteristic of this inflorescence. And that phenotype is called as a raphidium.
It's not a pattern of development?
It's a phenotype.
Yeah, I mean, we only deal with the phenotype here, though, right?
Yeah, we are all these shapes and developmental patterns and branching patterns and determinate and indeterminate values. These are all phenotypes.
Well, I don't know if I would. I mean, it depends how you kind of define what a phenotype is. There are different types of inflorescences for sure.
Do you mean like a phenotypic variability or something?
It is a phenotypic variability of an inflorescence arrangement.
But it's not like one plant would express these different types of inflorescences.
It's the same species. It's a species. It's a phenotypic variability of a species at a species level.
I don't think you could affect these in a common garden experiment or something. Say though, you'd have to do. I mean, if you change the development of the plant, you could affect it. But
so if I, for example, doesn't know anything about this inflorescence, if I have a character matrix. And the generic term for on one axis is inflorescence. What kind of inflorescence I found in this species X, I would call it Rhyphidium, right? So that what I'm filling out is a characteristic of that inflorescence. At that level, it becomes a phenotype value.
So if you had a phylogenetic matrix and you had a character called inflorescence,
yeah,
the states were different types, it would be what you're saying.
Yes.
But oftentimes we refer to that as composite coding because different characters went into that development and it's sort of the things below it are non-independent. So we try to hypothesize characters on just in the face of their existence as being independent and then seeing what happens through analysis. And I think this is a question of how do you break down characters and states, essentially.
Yeah. But for now, it's okay kind of thing. But in the long-term goal, I think these are character states and those are nothing but how you score your phenotypes, how you are scoring your species.
Yeah, I think that... No. I think that Dennis would have interest in this conversation for sure. But I've never thought about scoring these aside from what I just said, where I would have broken these down individual characters rather than states of a single character.
Yeah. I agree. This is a compound effect of based on the branching patterns and determinate, indeterminate, monopodial, sympodial, and all sorts of things. But it is the same thing as, for example, if I consider is your plant drought resistant or drought tolerant, right? So it's the same thing, but you have several other. You never measure for drought. You always measure for whether it has deep root land, it is leaf rolling effect, physiological effects and things. You combine those to say that it is a positively tolerant or susceptible. It's going that route the way I'm seeing it here.
Yeah, so you're saying it's analogous to being a shade tolerant plant or something. It's based on the sum. Mm-hmm. It's like an emergent property of some of the individual traits that allow to do that.
Right.
Okay. It's an interesting way of looking at this.
Because you're never looking for Rhyphidium inflorescence. You're looking for an inflorescence which appears to be like a Rhyphidium type.
Yes.
Then only you would call, this belongs to that particular group or species or genus. Right. So that's where. If you're observing the field of inflorescence type, observation is that it is a Rhyphidium type based on several other states and characters that you combine to call it. So at that level, it becomes a phenotype.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring this up because in the book that I used quite heavily for this, Morphology of Flowers and Inflorescences by a German author, it focuses mostly on how inflorescences in different plant groups transition into other types of inflorescences, what's necessary for this to turn into another type. But I can give you the citation if you'd be interested in seeing it.
Sure, and the way this, for example, the branching pattern is appearing is all determined by where, at what point or place the auxin accumulation happens and those cells go on to create that apical meristem to give you a lateral branch at that level. So there are molecular implications in this thing as well.
Sure, absolutely. Anyway, we're kind of getting, we're past the end of the hour, so we should probably continue if we're gonna get through this. It's getting kind of busy, you know.
Yeah, I think we have four left, so I can.
Can we continue with those?
Yeah, sure. Okay. So the next is a synsynous inflorescence. This is an inflorescence with sympodial growth, which in thesis is composed of determinate inflorescence axes with pedicellate flowers, with the latest developing flowers on the highest order inflorescence axis. So this zigzags, but in a different way, and I think these top-down images that Dario provided us with help to differentiate what we see here with what we just saw and what we'll see further below, where from the side of the inflorescence, it's not always evident how what the plane is of the branching. And
for sure.
And so I think that's very helpful. These are characteristic of the dayflower family, so Camelinaceae. Camelina.
Okay, I think that sounds fine.
And then we have a compound synsynous inflorescence. This is the only definition that is a work in progress. And it's, you'll see below what we've been playing with here. So this is an inflorescence with sympodial and monopodial growth habits, which in thesis is composed of determinate inflorescence axes, pedicellate flowers with the latest developing on the higher order inflorescence axes of the second order inflorescences. So essentially, this is a mixed monopodial and sympodial system where the second order inflorescence axes are themselves syncyni, if you want to use that term. And again, it looks like what we just saw above, but it's a dicasium, essentially. A dicasium of syncyni.
So my one suggestion is maybe you could do the same thing here with the monopodial and sympodial as the previous one.
Breaking it out into the...
Which axis it refers to.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion.
Yeah, other than that, I think it looks good.
And you'll see the Boraginaceae, the forget-me-not family, are examples on quite a few of these types later in the document. So
they have a variety of different forms.
They do. They have very cool inflorescences.
I love borage. It's one of my favorite plants. Love it.
And then we come to Bostrix.
Sorry, I don't have an image of this one.
Okay.
It's an inflorescence with a sympodial growth habit, which in enthesis is composed of pedicellate flowers on determinate inflorescence axes, each of which develop at approximately 90 degree angles from each other. Examples include forget-me-not family. So imagine you have the branching, that cymose branching that we were talking about, or the sympodial branching, coming out at 90 degree angles and forming a square that gets smaller and smaller as you move inwards. So helicoid cyme is very commonly used synonym for this, and also for the next inflorescence that we're coming down to, which is drapanium inflorescence. So the last one is an inflorescence with a sympodial growth habit, which in thesis is composed of pedicellate flowers on determinate inflorescence axes, each of which develops at progressively more acute angles from each higher order inflorescence axis. So it looks like a scorpion tail, essentially. It spirals. And so the difference between this and the one above it is that this looks like a spiral, and the other looks square and gets smaller and smaller, smaller squares as you move inwards. And the example here is wild-type tomato. I can put including here, scorpioid inflorescence, drapanium, monocasium.
So this is an example of a determinate tomato.
Yeah, so what you were referring to yesterday is indeterminate and determined tomatoes. And then when I was saying earlier in the call that even within tomatoes, we get these different types of inflorescences. Yeah, this is what would be considered determinate.
Aha. So we might, maybe we should clarify that.
Yeah, we could add information.
Because the indeterminate tomato wouldn't look like this.
No.
No.
Yeah, it looks more like a racine.
Yeah.
Like in cherry tomatoes, especially. Off the top of my head, at least.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, it's not the last one, actually. Compound drapanium.
Yeah.
Yeah, so inflorescence with both sympodial and monopodial growth habits, which at enthesis is composed of pedicellate flowers on determinate inflorescence axes, each of which develops a progressively more acute angles from each higher order inflorescence axis. So this is a compound version of what we just saw. Some species in Boraginaceae, the forget-me-not family, are good examples of this. And here we have a set of synonyms as well, including helicoid, scorpioid. Those are used inconsistently, unfortunately, throughout the literature. And so those are the types we have.
Well, I think that's great. And we've had some good comments and discussion about them.
Yeah, thank you very much for all the comments.
Yeah, and so I think you should go ahead and start polishing those and adding them.
Sounds great.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we will make those changes.
Yeah.
We'll contact you and show you what we've got.
Yeah. Any comments from, I know Luke is on the call, and Pankaj, you weren't here when Luke first joined the call and introduced himself.
I have a question.
Okay.
I feel like it's really helpful to have these images with each of the definitions. Is there a way yet that we can include these images in, like, as we're including the definitions?
Yeah, I was gonna mention that exact thing. I'm loving these pictures, you guys. I think that these make everything so much clearer to me as someone who doesn't have experience in this field, that we need to find a way to include these images in the definition somehow.
On the page or something.
Yeah, on the browser, perhaps. Maybe not in the actual ontology file, but somewhere on the Amigo browser, these would be extremely useful to have.
Is there a way to do that?
I think there is a way of doing it. Let me think about it, and then we should be able to get those in. Either add them as standalone images, and then do a web call to get them in. I think getting them in the Amigo would be a little challenge. I don't know, but at least they will refer back to some location on Plantium. Then people should be able to see them. So
we did this with some TPL images, I think, and we just put in links to them, which isn't ideal. It was kind of a workaround.
It'd be great if they could be right on that page. That'd be amazing.
It would be really nice.
I feel like some of the definitions can be like almost impossible to wrap your head around without a picture to go along with.
Definitely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you have to sort of trace it in your head while you're reading. It's hard. It's for sure hard.
And Dennis has been talking about, you know, having all this line art, and if we could have
And I think having the line art, but actually labeling whatever you have in your definition, the IDs, but putting them on the figure, that would be even more beneficial.
Oh yeah, that would be incredible, especially if it was some sort of like hover or like interacting.
Great, yeah, you could.
Yeah.
Then I don't know. I don't have the first clue of how to do that, but that would be incredible.
I mean, I can absolutely label these. I think these images are probably our best option as far as line art goes. I don't think it's much better than this, and I can label them with the words.
These are very clear.
Okay. So how about I label them while we simultaneously figure out a way to get them on the page?
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That would be excellent.
So you would do the first order, second, third, fourth order, the flower, and then these green peduncle and pedicel, and this these leaf-like structures, whatever you call it.
Bracteoles.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, great. Okay, well, I think we probably need to wrap up. Luke, did you want to add anything? Any news from your end over there? I know
maybe it will be good to add this as a sort of topic for the next meeting. We can go in more detail.
Yeah, I think it'd be nice to have our next meeting be do something. Maybe on the ontology side, I'd like to share a little bit of what I've been doing on the plant stress side.
That would be great. Yeah. So maybe we could plan that for the 25th.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for the comments and listening.
Mm-hmm.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.